Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode, heavy-hitting episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. High-caliber, action-packed. Brendan, how the heck are you feeling today? I'm excited, man.
Hey, I'm doing pretty good too. I mean, at the time we're recording this, we're getting some nice price action. We're getting some good news. There's a lot going on. And man, we got a familiar guest, a familiar face over here, one who we always appreciate having on. So can't get much better, Bryce.
Yep, I agree. Man, this is a true honor and pleasure. Humayun Sheikh, founder of Fetch AI. We are welcoming you back to the show. Had you on a few times in the past, but got some big updates and some big conversations to have today. So welcome to the show. And how are you?
Always a pleasure. As you know, Bryce, Brendan, it's always fun to have a chat with you guys. I think we have a lot to discuss, as we all know. So I'm really looking forward to it so that you guys can go ahead and ask whatever you like. And let's get it moving.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's obviously for longtime listeners know that we've been big fans of what you guys have been doing at Fetch AI and then the artificial super intelligence ASI, you know, operation that you guys have been running in partnership with several other, you know, AI meets crypto projects. But it seems like there's been a little bit of a kerfluffle. It seems like things have potentially broken down. I don't know. Tell us the high level. What's going on? I don't want to read the tea leaves or get hooked on these random Twitter threads because everybody's got an opinion. So let's hear from the horse's mouth.
Sure. We, as you know, we spoke about this. We did a alliance and we did a token merger with three founding members, which was Fetch AI, Singularity, and Ocean. And then we added another alliance member, which is Kudos. So, and we were moving along, and I think in June, and I think let's just dig a little bit into the background. So why did we do it? We did it because we felt we need to build a tech stack. The tech stack includes the agentic AI, which is what Fetch brought into the mix. We had Singularity, who was working on more research stuff, so that how do you make these models better? How do you bring more AI algorithmic models? And how do you then bring them to the market using the agentic stuff? So they were working on that. They were also working on the technology for the next iteration of, let's say, a blockchain, which is AI specific. So that's what they were working on. We had Ocean, who were working on the data side, data tools, which we felt were kind of really very nicely fitting into the stack. And then we had Kudos, who brought in the compute. So decentralized compute platform where you can actually plug in compute and then you can use it and distribute it. So that was the component, that was the tech stack. And we felt very comfortable that our tech stack was and actually still is pretty much at the cutting edge. It's probably one of the deepest tech stack that you'll find in our crypto space. And the reason why we did it was to make it so coherent so that everybody can deploy a solution and don't have to worry about too many tokens. Don't have to worry about integrating too many technologies. You deploy and it works. So that's that was the premise. That's what we were doing. And that's how it started. And 1 year down the line, we had Ocean announced. Announced, and I'll give you the detail of the announcement first, and then we can dig into what actually happened. So they announced that they want to leave the alliance, which, okay, I mean, it's an alliance. That's great. You know, we still have technologies together, and, you know, there's some components of their technology we use. We don't need to use it, but nobody is going to stop. You build technology for people to use. I mean, there is some data technology which is not particularly that innovative, but we were using part of it. And they decided to leave the alliance, which is fine, not a problem. Alliances are not to force people to doing anything. They wanted to take their own route, which is absolutely fine. But let's just rewind a little bit. In June, there was, when we did the alliance, there was this whole pool of community reward tokens, which Ocean had indicated that that's what they are. Ocean committed to providing this community reward tokens, which they previously had publicized everywhere. I mean, they've written papers about it, that this is how these tokens are going to get distributed. That we had a vision paper, which actually Trent was a very critical part of, announcing that we are going to have these tokens, which are going to be community reward tokens. We're going to reward the community for building solutions. Mm-hmm. We want to build the ecosystem. We all have different methods, and Fetch Foundation has its own method, but this was what was indicated, and this is one of the reasons why we actually did the alliance with them, was because they had this pool. They just minted 50% of their supply a year or so ago for community rewards, and we wanted to bring that in because they were struggling to build community projects because there wasn't really much action going on. And the reason was that, yes, I mean, you can't just have data doing nothing, right? I mean, there's no application unless you actually have applications. So fit it in the stack well, and we wanted to build these solutions. And for that, they would have rewarded, we were going to use the community reward tokens to reward the projects. And you can see, and we can talk about the technology, and you can see what all the products that are coming out of Fetch and Singularity at the moment, and Kudos itself as well. So those tokens were meant for community reward tokens. What transpired is that on 25th of June or something, these guys just withdrew a huge chunk out of those tokens, right? So there was like 289 million FET, which, by the way, was a conversion from Ocean. They were meant for conversion into FET for FET and ASI Alliance community. And Ocean decided, and this is not how it was meant to be, because Ocean said, we're going to enable people to build these projects which are going to use Ocean technology, we're going to reward these people with those tokens, and suddenly all these tokens get converted into FET, and then suddenly we felt there was some hack, and we went and investigated, but turns out that this is Ocean Foundation. Now they call it not Foundation, but now they call it Ocean DAO, Ocean Expedition, or whatever they want to call it, or all the representation.
Ocean Gate.
Ocean, what you want.
It's Ocean Gate, like Watergate or Deflategate.
Sure. All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at afani.com/crypto101. That's afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani.
If you could only get one altcoin right now, get this one. I'm talking about the coin we believe has the strongest upside potential in today's market. After analyzing hundreds of altcoins, guys, this is the opportunity that keeps me awake with excitement all night. So here's why. It's got the perfect combination of strong fundamentals, proven team, and a catalyst that could send it significantly higher in the coming months. Yet it's still flying under the radar of many retail investors, which means you've still got time to get positioned before the crowd catches on. Look, we believe this is the perfect time to get in on this specific coin. So to get the full breakdown, just go to www.cryptorevolution.com/coin right now. The window of opportunity will not stay open forever.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what True Age helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code Crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is when I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs, Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. Their outerwear lineup is no joke, guys. You have to go check it out. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By cutting out the middleman and traditional markup, Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. It's everything you actually want to wear. Built to hold up season after season. Guys, the down jacket I picked up from Quince is getting me through the cold winter when I go up north to visit my family. I also got an awesome vest that I like to wear down here in Florida when the weather gets colder as well. It looks super expensive and designer, but again, it's a fraction of the price. Guys, get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled this holiday season with Quince. Don't wait. Go to Quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your orders and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's Quince, Quince.com/crypto101. You'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/crypto101. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah. So they just did that, and then we went and we did some legal stuff, held back, but then they announced that they're leaving. Which, as I said, no problem. But, you know, you can't just convert all the tokens, convert it into FET, and then dump it on the community. Well, that's not right. It's meant for community tokens. You've declared this going to be done over 10 years. I mean, this is like 10 years plus. 10 years was the half-life. So we're looking at tokens which were meant to be distributed over 10, 20 years for people building the projects. I mean, we haven't seen a project from them. And suddenly all the tokens disappear and then they started selling them. So again, I can't talk too much about the legal stuff because it's still ongoing. But I mean, we took some legal actions. They took some legal actions. There was still a pool of 100 million FET, which is still which we didn't top up the bridge with. And that still sits there. And what I am and the Alliance is arguing is, hey, I mean, these should not be given for people to be converted because you've already left the Alliance and you've dumped the tokens on the people here. So that's kind of what the sequence of events transpires to be. Of course, they now claim OceanDAO is some other entity, which is what you would read in their blog post. It might be another entity, but who cares? I mean, you made representations under Foundation saying all these tokens belong to the community. I mean, it's like me saying, well, here's 300 million tokens, FET tokens. I'm going to give it to the community. But one day I wake up and I take all those 300 million tokens and I go and sell them. for my purposes, my own purposes. Well, we call it rug pull, right?
Yeah. Right.
When the founders do it, it's called a rug pull. So that's what I'm saying. And you guys tried to do a rug pull. Now, if you did it on ocean, that's 51% of your supply. You would have really killed everybody. It's like, because we are Fetch and we have Alliance and we have Singularity part of it, Kudos part of it, we're still going. Of course, it's going to damage the token price. I mean, it did damage the token price. All the negativity then they started creating, all the false news that they started spreading. Well, what they're doing is like, oh, well, look at, oh, you did X, Y, and Z wrong. But hang on a minute. We did X, Y, and Z wrong. Nothing happened, but you dumped the token in the market. And now you're saying, let's not look at that. Let's look at some hypothetical problem, which we have just come up with. So that's what's going on right now. So I think I'll pause here for any questions.
Man, I mean, yeah, I'm sorry to you and to the community and to everybody involved. It just sounds like a... something not fun to be involved with. And it's really a bummer. It takes you away from, you know, doing what you're really passionate about, which is, you know, artificial intelligence and making these applications that are going to make the world a better place and easier to interface with and so on and so forth. But it's part of the, you know, it's
the game.
yeah. Right. I mean, it's
well,
part of reality now.
So. It's not funny because, I mean, of course, over the last month or so, I've taken personal time to actually try and fix this problem. Of course, other members of the Alliance are also trying to do that. But the issue is that because I've taken this stance where I'm saying, no, I'm not letting this go because that's not right for the community, then obviously you get personal attacks on you. So that's kind of what has been happening and trying to come through that on the other side. But you know how crypto is, where everybody can have an opinion, right? Everybody
totally
thinks they know better than anybody else.
Yeah, so, I guess the first question that pops into my mind just naturally from hearing this is, how did they have the ability to make that transaction? How did they have the private keys to these funds that should have been locked up? Because it seems like there was an element of, you know, obviously trust that if it wasn't Ocean, it could have been Fetch, or if it wasn't Fetch, it could have been Kudos or AGIX who could have done this. But, you know, all of crypto is about like not trusting, but verifying and having these multi-sigs and having layers of security and stuff. Like, what was the setup that allowed them
to take money? That's the whole point of misrepresentation. The whole point of misrepresentation is you say, here is a Ocean DAO, right? So Fetch doesn't have all the keys, right? It doesn't have the keys. We don't have the community tokens. We never had the community tokens in the same way. We put everything over the last 5 years. We put it into community. We let the foundation distribute it to the community. So we have foundation tokens. We call them foundation tokens, which is if foundation did something, then we are responsible for that. So somebody can come and question us. We have been questioned many times now. But most of our community reward tokens have already been distributed, and they were sitting in a lot of the other pools where we have a whole mechanism of the chain. So you can actually submit your proposal with the validators. Validators can approve it. Then we get distributed. So there's a whole reward pool mechanism which works on voting. Ocean, on the other hand, represented that there is an Ocean DAO. And this Ocean DAO is not in their control, right? So we asked them, and they gave us some keys and said, you know, these are the community members. And we did keep asking them, guys, so who are these community members? I mean, what is the mechanism of doing this? Oh, it's like, you know, it's written here, it's written there. We read it, and sometimes you kind of have to move on with trust in the sense that the representation, it's a DAO, it's controlled as a DAO, then okay, we move on from that. But turns out that it wasn't actually, I mean, there was no DAO-like behavior, unfortunately. And the whole point was that the conversion of these tokens was meant to be done over time. And that's why some of the tokens were held back so that we didn't top everything up. But that's the whole point of the whole problem, is that the representations that were made were incorrect.
Wow. And so, yeah, not to, not again, I, this well, is, yeah, I just I wanted this to,
I would go as far as, you know, I am not a legal person, but I would say if you made a misrepresentation about that many tokens, about that much money, you know, I would be bordering into fraud.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say. It sounds like you were defrauded in a sense, but I'm not legal.
It's not my tokens. I'm not fighting for myself. I'm fighting for the project and the community. These tokens belong to the Alliance community. They didn't belong to Fetch founders, you know, the two people who set it up and running it. It wasn't for them to just decide to take it and go.
Right.
And cash them and put the monies in their pockets. Or I don't know what they did with them, but I can't prove anything either way.
It's going to be a landmark case. I mean, because I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I know I don't want to get too much into like stuff that you're not allowed to talk about or whatever, but I think it was a case that was filed in the Southern District of New York, and there's probably never been a similar case like this in all of financial or whatever law. I mean, maybe they're going to, I mean, again, is there? Like, is this going to be truly a landmark case?
It will go through that. It's process. Of course, it's a long process, but I mean, I guess other cases have happened, but nothing like this. It's just slightly different in the sense that it's not it is still misrepresentation, but it's done as a class action, so that's slightly different to what has happened in the past. So I, as much as I'm funding it, I am not in control of it, because there's a lot of people who lost a lot of money here. And I mean, you have to be careful. It's not a security, it's a utility token, so we have to be aware of those things. And again, I don't want to go too much into what's going to happen legally, but because I can't, but you could see that if somebody and they have the audacity to stand there and start blaming me for things or Alliance for things and saying Alliance did something wrong. Absolutely not. I mean, we were getting along quite well, in the sense, not with Ocean perhaps, but with the rest of it, we were building the stack, and you've seen the progress which is coming through. And suddenly we are very comfortable that very soon, I mean, and as I will explain to you, you know, our applications are getting more and more traction. There's more and more people signing up, and we're looking at that earn and burn kicking in very soon, and it's already kicking in. All of that was going well, and then they decided, I have no idea. I mean, they, for some kind of spiked the Alliance, I don't know, but they just took it. Or it's just pure, they wanted the money and they took it.
Yeah.
They got the liquidity and they just took it. I mean, wow. It's not their tokens to take.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. And like Bryce said, it's going to be a landmark, and it's complicated. And, you know, a lot more questions will continue to be answered, I think, as time goes on. But the final question on this topic, what would your perfect resolution look like? Would it be something where holders get compensated for what's happened, or is it something else?
Well, let's just be logical here. Yeah. Right? I don't want to be illogical. Logical thing is, Ocean wanted to leave the Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? Fine. Leave the Alliance. You're not happy with enough decentralization. Having said that, we're the ones who do the voting. They're the ones who do kind of their own decisions and don't even ask the community. But hey, you want to be more decentralized. So their ethos is, we have to be very much more decentralized. We don't want to vote. We don't want the DAO to be run properly. We can make our own decisions, you know, unilateral decisions, but that's called decentralization. Okay, fine.
Fate loves irony.
Yeah. It's like you go and do all those decisions. Right. But here's the point. You don't want to be part of the ASI community. You don't want to be part of the ASI Alliance. ASI Alliance's token is FET. Why did you convert your own Ocean token into FET token? If you were planning to leave, because it comes out that they were planning to leave, because if you read the blog post, they kind of refer to the facts that they were not happy and they were going to leave. Well, if you were planning to leave, and if you were that unhappy with the Alliance, why did you then convert all your Ocean tokens into FET tokens, which didn't, by the way, belong to them? It belonged to their community. It belonged to the people who were going to build. Do you have any voting? We can see. No. Do you have any evidence that the community actually wanted to do that? No. Where are these tokens? Well, apparently now these tokens belong to a Cayman company, of which Bruce Pond is the only director, called Ocean's Expedition. And now they have openly said that. And they're saying, oh, it's owned by a trust. Well, okay. Who's the beneficiary of the trust? Is it the community? Is it the people? But again, it's just, I mean, this is typical. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it, but it's a typical behavior of people who want to take or defraud other people. Yeah. Because you, if you look at the tokens flow, they converted it, they sent it to 30 or 40 other wallets. From each wallet, they went into mixers and into options and into exchanges and into. So, I mean, it's, and we did quite a lot of work trying to track it. And we have all the evidence to track it, that this is going here, there, and everywhere. I mean, you're going to Binance, you're going to GSR, you're going to, you know, others, you're taking out options, you're selling them. I mean, they committed, they actually admitted that they sold like $70 million worth of FET already. Jeez. I mean, I'm sure after that admission, they've done even more. But the point is, they're not your tokens. They are your community's tokens. But then they're saying OceanDAO is owned by Ocean Expedition. And so there's no communities that they decided to take the tokens.
A classic case of just, they thought they took what was theirs, but it clearly wasn't theirs, I guess. Like, it's, I just
mean, again, if it was theirs, then prove it. I mean, you wrote papers after papers after papers telling the community that these are community reward tokens and they will be distributed to the community over 20 years or 10 years or whatever. Yeah. I mean, we have plenty of materials which they say that. So how come you just suddenly took it? And this is when you didn't want to be part of the alliance, and yet you converted it into the alliance token.
Wow. Well, I'm going to be following along with the case very, very closely. And, you know, we'll have you back on for some checkpoints over the years as this kind of...
I'm always here.
Yeah. But let's talk about some of the good stuff. Let's talk about the traction of the apps. Let's talk about just the future of ASI and all the good work that you and Dr. Ben Gertzel over at AGIX and the folks at Kudos, you know, reset. Let's reset. Everybody take a big, deep breath. I know that was a lot. Our listeners are probably like, I don't know if this is exactly what I expected to listen to today, because it's very unlike most of our podcasts. So going to take a quick reset. We just want to take a look at the bright future that you're still building. Okay. So walk us through some of that.
Yeah, that's my favorite topic, right? So I'm also fed up of this rubbish. So
yeah.
So here's, you know, let's start from the top, right? So we said we're going to build this agentic framework. We did, and we are, and we're building it, and we're improving it. So if any of you guys have not tried it, I would highly recommend you guys try it, and you guys try ASI1.ai, and go and turn on, you know, different things and try them and see how we have actually built the whole infrastructure where you can actually communicate with agents directly. You can actually speak to them. You can have your own agent within a minute just by signing up to ASI One, which you can train, which you can personalize. You can attach your calendar. It can do bookings for you with other people. I mean, we can, all three of us can find, you know, time. We can ask our agents to do it. They can go and do it. They can send emails. They can do all of that. You know, it might sound simple, but it's not that simple. And the reason, let me explain. Have you guys built any agents yet? I mean, if you have, then are you a coder? Because coders might have done, but what an individual person who doesn't know how to code too much. And how long does it take to build your agent? I mean, with ASI One, you go in and you click a few buttons, three buttons, and you can actually have your own agent, right? Out of the box.
Wow.
You can ask this agent to do things for you. Other people can ask questions for you. I released one of my agents for people to chat with and communicate with. It had its own personality. It had its own information and knowledge base, and you could ask them. So all of that is now kind of going in, and people are signing up. We're getting, you know, 10, 15,000 users coming in every day in terms of actually using ASI One, which is which does everything which other LLMs do, but more in terms of the agentic stuff. So you can actually ask for agents, you can actually query them. So the whole infrastructure where agents become discoverable, it doesn't matter where you build them, but they become discoverable to a large language model, is the infrastructure which we have now. It's not in the future. It's not, we're not talking about it. It's actually deployed. It's live. People can actually sign up for it. We have like 2.7, 2.8 million agents. Give or take, not all of them are doing exactly what they should be doing. Some of them are kind of built just for testing, but majority of them have a purpose, and you can actually go and ask your LLM to find you an agent which does something, and you'll find one. And you can ask it to do something, and it will do it. You can actually communicate to it. But to get to that point, and you will see that when you use the ASI1 platform, there is a whole planning, reinforcement learning, neurosymbolic learning, neurosymbolic modeling in terms of getting you deterministic outcomes, combine it with the generative AI outcomes, and then doing all sorts of integrations with the legacy systems. It's a huge engineering and research task, which we have now kind of in a place where we actually have launched the product. So that's the top layer. I think you have some question, Brendan. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it seems like AI is trying to go in all these different ways, right? There's a bunch of different people have a bunch of different opinions about like how we can use AI and what should be focused and what's of the highest priority. And I think the cool thing about the ASI, or, you know, the Artificial Superintelligence Alliance, is that you all get to work on a couple of these different areas. But from your point of view, what areas are you the most interested in? And I guess what areas of artificial intelligence do you think should take priority over kind of the rest, if any?
Yeah. So, I mean, pinpointing one or two is probably quite difficult, but let me just give you my train of thought. So we had web. When web came, it was everything needed to be changed into web first. What it meant was everybody needed a website. That's where we started, right? We were not mature enough. The technology wasn't mature enough. All it was a catalog that was a website. From there, we evolved into e-commerce systems. From there, we evolved into very, very complex infrastructures which were running on web, right? So that's, use that as your paradigm and then translate that into AI first. This was web first. Now we have AI first. What is the difference? From me, you'll always hear some more commercialization kind of methodology, because I feel, you know, yes, we need to create this AGI, but ultimately it will evolve as more commercialization happens. Yeah. It's not going to evolve in a vacuum. So I'm taking that commercial. I'll give you my commercialization / evolution of commercialization approach first, and then we can dig deeper into what is needed. So web first always needed websites. Now we're going into AI. AI needs multiple components, just like web did. And the web paradigm relied on the application layer, which was a website, which then evolved into e-commerce and kind of evolved into more complex technologies. In AI first, your application layer is going to be agentic. So you have an agent, you have multiple agents. And if I make the simple comparison with websites, what it is websites were static, they were informational. Mm-hmm. Agents are more cognitively aware, they're autonomous, can be autonomous, they can do things, they can have intelligence, you can make them do active actions. So all of those things which were missing in web, with AI comes this layer which can help you do that. What do we need for that layer? If you go dig a little bit deeper, I mean, we are proponents of a combination of expert models. I don't feel we're going to have one huge big model just about doing everything. And I think that kind of is also starting to come through in other people's opinions, is that we will have one expert model for for, let's say, medical brain kind of analysis or something. Oh, and then you'll have one physics model focusing on quantum physics, for example. So these are all expert models which people are going to build and they're going to specialize. And then you, underneath that, you have this one large language model which can actually understand the intent and call these expert models. So what's in the middle between those two is the infrastructure which enables you to bring those models when you need them. And that's the agentic web. Because if you think, I mean, again, it could be very, very complex model, or it could be a very simple model. Just dealing with an API is also an agent, or dealing with a complex model which does brain analytics or quantum physics analytics can also be represented by an agent. So when you build this infrastructure where this large model who is context aware, which is able to translate your intent to calling the right models, orchestrating the outcomes of different models to deliver something that you're asking, that infrastructure is what Fetch has, what Agentverse is, and how we interact with agents is. And that evolves into a more complex solution, and I'll explain how. So all those interactions and all those combinations of actions, these actions could be knowledge-based, these actions could be legacy system-based, these could be physical, these could be just virtual actions. They all actually form part of these reinforcement learning models. So you can actually start making these reinforcement learning models which understand much better your intent and what the actions are required. So that's combined with all this agentic stuff, combined with the reinforcement models, combined with the generative AI models. That stack, well, it needs to live on compute, right? So right underneath, you have to have quite a lot of compute, which is why we're seeing NVIDIA's valuations going crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Because all of this AI-first infrastructure, one has to be enabled. It has to live somewhere. And second, it will live and compute on a compute kind of infrastructure. Yeah. So that's the whole stack for you. So saying which one is more important, I think we need all of them effectively.
It's crazy. Just sorry to interrupt. The compute that NVIDIA is providing, they seem like they've got a stranglehold on the market. I think a $5 trillion or something like that market cap. Again, that fluctuates day to day by $1 trillion or something, which is just insane to think about.
Like nothing.
Like if you look back a few years ago, I mean, I don't know, 10 years ago, I don't think there were any companies that were over $2 trillion. The fact now that we have several, and this kind of like is where, you know, I kind of have a question around like some of these big dogs like Meta, Google, XAI, OpenAI wants to go public now, which God, we could talk about that. You could talk about that, how it started as a nonprofit. Right?
That's another upcoming for everybody to enjoy.
AI that'll be boom. Another lawsuit between Sam Altman and Elon Musk that'll get broadcast over every airwave. But like, how you know, kind of to keep things, you know, relevant here, how do you and the ASI and maybe even generally other, you know, crypto startups or AI startups, how do they compete with the big dogs when it seems like they've just got, you know, economies of scale and so much CapEx and just they could just train these things at a quicker rate? Like, how do you just think about competing in that arena?
Well, I mean, that was one of the reasons why we foresaw that problem. That's why we combined. That's why we built the alliance, right? Mm-hmm. Because we needed to compete. And you're absolutely right. It's not easy the way to these valuations are. I mean, crypto actually, it's very unfortunate. We're still not actually appreciating what is here right now, what we have here, because really, if you look at anything in comparison to normal companies, the valuations are insane. I mean, you can see them already. But to compete, not to compete, but to actually create solutions which are at least comparative, to these big entities, these massive valuation entities, which have a capital, they don't even know how much they have and what to do with it. We've actually done a pretty decent job of building this whole stack. Mm-hmm. At the moment, if you, and I, you know, I was saying to you, there are agentic systems which exist, but there's nothing here where you can say, oh yes, you know, there's such an agentic system. I went in and I created an agent and my friend can speak to my agent, right? You can't. There's nothing here. I mean, Meta could have done it because Meta is in the space of networking and it's in the space of social connections. They haven't got it. XAI doesn't. I mean, it's very much we want our model to sit where we sit and we'll make it better and better and you guys can come and talk to it. But luckily, what we're saying is that's one model, that's one way of doing things. And where the opportunity comes is where you don't need that much capital and you just need more innovative thinking commercially and actually technologically, is to build a parallel solution, not even fully parallel because we still use large language model, but to create some utility. If people can use something very quickly, which is what OpenAI did really well, right? People started using it. Mm-hmm. I mean, others have failed to do that. I mean, Google has probably got the most amount of possible utility that could come out. But they're kind of a little bit slow and they do things in a different way. But you're going to see that application layer mature very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But infrastructure, it's like, and again, we had the web, but before the web came the telco boom, right? So in the telco boom, without the infrastructure spend on connectivity, on web, we would not have seen the web paradigm. And we would
didn't
not...
they over-indexed on it. Like they invested way too much in broadband and all this kind of stuff at the peak of the bubble. And then all of that network connectivity was all stale. Nobody was using it. And then the market crashed, right?
But not to say that it wasn't useful. We are using it now. The streaming
right now
came,
we are.
Applications came along. So this is going to exactly pan out the same way, right?
Yeah.
We're creating overcapacity of everything. And then suddenly the applications will come along. I mean, I'm hoping this time we've learned from it and the applications will come along quicker so that we don't miss kind of represent the compute that is required. But it's very, very similar to what happened in broadband, right? What happened with the telco infrastructure. Everybody was going out, spending money. Companies were getting valued at crazy valuations. And all they were doing were building the infrastructure. And then everybody kind of realized once the infrastructure is done, you need applications. And if they don't exist, then you have got nothing, right? So that's kind of where we are in this phase, on the AI phase as well. But slight difference could be that we've learned from our mistakes and we're going to build the applications quicker. Now, it's not happening right now because we're still just generating videos. And there is, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's a huge demand. People take a lot of photos. People do a lot of TikToking. There is an application. I have no judgment on if it's good or bad, but there is application. But that's only the beginning, because ultimately every organization, every enterprise is going to have to convert this into an AI first model, which will be an agentic kind of model. Mm-hmm. Because without it, you have to completely dispose of your legacy system, and nobody's going to do that.
Wow. Yeah. It's going to be totally crazy.
It is going to be totally crazy. And it's always a little bit frustrating to me when people say, oh, you know, this is just like the dot-com bubble, when I think it's really different from that in nature. And you look at a lot of artificial intelligence and AI, and it's a lot of these companies and a lot of like the use cases, like there is a real use case and there's a lot of money that's being made from it already. And it's only going to get better. Whereas with the dot-com bubble, it wasn't quite that. And
well, I mean, you say that. I mean, I there is a slight divergence in what I'm thinking, in the sense that you're right, there is a lot of utility, and web also had a lot of utility. But then you start coming up with this some weird, just no non-solution solutions to problems which don't exist. Yeah. And that's happening here too.
Yeah. And I guess you're right. It's a good point.
And I wonder, like, if, like, for instance, like when Netflix, like, was starting and they did all of their, like, you know, stream, you know, they didn't start with streaming, they just started with DVDs, but then there was all this capacity for the internet, and they were like, oh, well, we could start to, you know, engineer and figure out a way to, like, you know, stream IP, you know, over IP and all that kind of stuff. But they maybe wouldn't have thought about that if that extra capacity was never built in the first place. And so it's just a boom and bust cycle. I guess it's like as a tale as old as time. But I am curious about the energy capacity as well, or the component here, because, you know, I hear a lot of people talk like AI, like, you know, obviously we're scared of the AI overlords and Elon's robots. But I think a really real actual fear is like, will this just drive up the cost of energy everywhere, which is, and it's already soaring. I don't know. We're going to have to do nuclear, but everybody says nuclear's, you know, it's obvious, you know, there's dangers and stuff, and it's just tough to get that spun up. There's turbines that take years and years and years to build. And like, what's the actual physical constraints that you're looking at, and how do you kind of alleviate maybe some of the layman fears of like, more AI means more energy consumption, means less energy for me to heat my house or whatever?
Sure. I'm more optimistic about it, because I feel this is obviously a pattern. This is a growth pattern, which is happening. If you look at the data centers that are being built in different parts of the world now, the big, you know, mega data centers, mega AI centers, they are a lot more efficient. They need a lot less power. They're being built with all of that in mind. I mean, there's multiple points you've raised. Let's look at like all these AI centers that are going up. So the consumption is going to be becoming more and more efficient. We're not used to it. We're now deploying these solutions. And I was watching something on Bloomberg the other day, and they were showcasing how efficient these AI centers are going to be. So we're going to improve a lot of this efficiency. I remember from our old DeepMind days, when one of the things we did there was AI actually improve the efficiency of the data centers of Google. So by 20-25%. So we're going to actually use AI to improve the efficiency of these centers which we're building. So that's going to happen as just a natural process. You have got nuclear power, which is going to become more and more available. There is nano nuclear plants coming. There's containerized nuclear plants coming, which could be put in kind of remote places where the risk of radiation is low on any humans or, you know, or nations. So that's also happening. We're not going to come to this consumption in 2 minutes. It's going to take some time. And again, I mean, this phase is going to ease off slightly, in the sense that let's go past these just photo and video generations and see what after that. I don't think at the moment we see much more after that. We're quite, you know, we're kind of stuck in that. Can I generate a TikTok video and can I get a million views? Right. I mean, there's things like parrots talking to policemen going around. There's children acting, adults acting, looking like children going around. All of that is fun, but ultimately we're going to get bored of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing real about it. And then we're going to start generating movies for... I mean, again, I think one part of me feels that movies are going to become self-generated, you know, based around you, and all of that will happen. And then, you know, so that consumption is there, but it's not huge consumption. That consumption will be... We can cope with it without all these data centers. But these AI centers are going to then... be available, just like we said, broadband, and that's when streaming started. So we're going to start seeing applications which are going to use it.
Did you see the Michael Burry short on AI? Did you see any information about that? He came out and he's like, I want to short AI. And I think his two go-tos were NVIDIA and Palantir. What do you think?
The Palantir founder was like all
he was pretty upset.
Pissed off. He was. I remember they were like, I'm not getting defensive. I'm getting offensive. Like this guy, he wants to short, you know, a company with the best, the best AI and the best, finances that he just can't understand. Then go for it. But yeah, that's a great question, Brennan. What are your thoughts on that, Human?
My thoughts are that you're always going to have. I mean. $5 trillion, if you're asking me personally, I think is slightly insane. Uh-huh. But okay, still $3 trillion could be possible, right? If other companies are $2 trillion, and you can see the so having a short on it, to me, it doesn't seem that illogical. I mean, short doesn't mean it has to go down to zero.
It's not forever.
It could mean that $5 trillion becomes $3 trillion or $4 trillion. That's still a short which pays off. So the point is not that. And I actually don't fully agree with Michael Burry's kind of approach. And I think I'd probably be more pro Palantir and Nvidia. But I do feel there is this cyclical false economy being generated. So you take a product which actually is very crypto-like, to be fair. I mean, if you want to do a crypto comparison, so you have this chip which is your utility token. You take that utility token and you say to somebody, hey, I'm going to give you this utility token, and you put it on your you then become a company which I made an investment in, but then you put an order for that utility token as well. So it's a very
circular
circular kind of scheme whereby your sales, actually you're creating your sales, and then you're reporting those sales, and then you're issuing new shares which then you're using to create more sales. And these sales are in the future. They're not today. These sales are in the future. So you could actually run. It's like a runaway train, effectively, which is just kind of, it's kind of creating its own steam and just running away with it. And I think that's, to me, that is slightly dangerous. And I think that is where I think probably Barry's comments are coming from as well. That's why he's looking to short.
Wow. Awesome. Look, while we have you, I just want to, kind of as a wrap up question, what do we have to look forward to with ASI and sort of over the course of the next, 6 to 12 months? What's in the pipeline, and what are some things that you're really excited about?
What I'm really excited about is creating a product which people actually use. And I think we are at the cusp of it. We are actually building it, and we are actually getting uptake. We are actually taking, we're getting signups from people, not just crypto people, because our product is not crypto based alone. We are open. This is a normal product for anybody and everybody. Crypto is an underlying technology which helps with payments, which helps with decentralization in the sense that it's open. It's like saying, we have the ICANN of the new agentic web. So we have that. We have the Google of this agentic web, in the sense of we can do search and discovery of agentic systems. We can do search and discovery of AIs. We can actually connect them, and we can actually monetize them. So to me, that over the next 12 months is going to be the most exciting things. I mean, there is research going on. Of course, there is research going on. But really, the research makes any difference when you actually start seeing it do something and it generates something. I mean, we talked about in the past, we talked about neurosymbolic AI, combining that with generative AI and trying to make it deterministic responses, which agents are doing. We've now kind of implemented all of that. It's actually in working. It's actually delivering an outcome. And if you haven't used it, I would highly recommend that you use the ASI One platform. Try and work out the personalization part. See how many responses you actually prefer as compared to anything else. And you can actually find agents, and you can actually speak to agents, and you can do some things which you can't do anywhere else. I mean, you know, you can go and ask it to generate five different, I mean, our favorite thing is to generate images, right? So five different images using five different models, which are represented by five different agents, right? It'll generate you five different images from different models. I mean, it's as simple as writing a prompt. And you're speaking to agents. So that's very exciting. Some of the other technologies, exciting technologies, which are coming out of the Alliance itself, this was more fetch, but is ASI Chain, which has got huge research and technology, which is a lot faster than the chains, which is built for AI. It's actually built for AI. It has a sharding mechanism where you can deploy different models, you can deploy different activities, you can actually create a compute shard, you can create an, you know, a expert model shards. You can actually take that and actually make it more a usable blockchain which has a purpose in AI. And I think AI is going to be one of the most prolific technologies which actually requires blockchain at some point. That's quite saying something, right? Where everybody's going with these centralized huge capital spends in one entity, I see that these shards can actually enable us and this new way of thinking. I mean, the chain is not ready yet, but it will be next year. We'll release testnet and you'll be able to see how fast it is. You'll be able to see what it can do for you. To combine that with the agentic system that we got, and we get getting all this uptake on the compute that we have, the compute platform, all of that combined is, I'm really excited about it because that's what we wanted to build. And we actually have it within a year, right? We put it all together. It uses all these things and the chain is coming out. The agentic system's already out. The compute is getting deployed. We have millions of hours of compute being used on the platform. So I'm actually quite excited, you know, cutting out all that noise that happened. You know, the whole stack is really, really working well, and I'm really excited about it.
I love it. Well, look, we greatly appreciate your time joining us, getting our community up to speed on what's going on. And obviously, we wish you all the best and the community all the best. And we hope to have you back on again here with more exciting developments. Whenever
and
works
for
you.
We're not giving up. This is a small hiccup. We're going to recover from it. We're going to be back to where we should be. And, you know, I challenge anybody and everybody to come and have a look at the technology and say, anybody has a better technology? I mean, we have it and we have been creating the utility. And as we get into this phase of adoption, the whole game will change because our adoption is not crypto alone. Our adoption is worldwide. For anybody, so we're not just a crypto project. We are outside of crypto project, so the scale is much bigger.
I love it. Well, Humayun Sheikh, founder of Fetch AI, thank you so much. And everybody at home listening, we hope you enjoyed. And come back same time, same place next week. We'll have some more great guests for you. Take care.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.